Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber. On today's show, did you ever want to sue a website? Have you ever wondered if it's even possible to sue a website? The answer might surprise you. Joining me to discuss this is Kathy Gellis, solo cyber lawyer focused on platforms and free speech, and she's based in Sausalito. Kathy, thanks for joining us in DC. So we talked about this on the show before, platform liability. The basic question, what can courts or what can we reasonably expect from platforms when we're talking about things like crime or just violations of housing laws like Airbnb? And to bring listeners up to speed, we're talking about a section of law called Section 230. So can you briefly explain what Section 230 is for our listeners?
Section 230 is a piece of the Communications Decency Act that was not part of the unconstitutional aspects of the Communications Decency Act of 1996. Congress was really worried about bad things on the internet, particularly of the porn flavor, and tried to pass a law to get rid of them. And this law was mostly done away with in Reno versus ACLU. The Supreme Court spoke and said, this isn't going to be, this. The First Amendment is not going to let you statutorily do the type of censorship you want to do. But when the law was being passed, Congress put in Section 230 as part of it. And Section 230 is, it's lasted, and it's had a very powerful effect because what it does is insulate the platforms that intermediate everybody's speech and make sure that it's not to say that nobody's going to be liable if something is wrong with the speech. A likely thing that is wrong is it might be defamatory. The speech may still be defamatory, but that if you want to hold somebody legally responsible for what's wrong with it, you can only hold the person who created it liable, not the platform that intermediated it. And this protection is really important, really robust, really strong, and really necessary for all the platforms that in the last 20 years we have come into existence and all the interesting services and tools and usefulness that they end up providing.
It's remarkably forward-looking. I mean, if you think about where Congress was in 1996, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, my boss Barron has said, didn't really contemplate the internet. It acknowledged the internet. It didn't really regulate it, but they still put this provision in. And it's amazing because that was 8 years before Facebook, 8 years before YouTube, 12 years before Twitter. And I've argued, and I'd like to get your thoughts, that Web 2.0, user-generated content, people interacting with each other via platforms would not have taken off at all, or maybe not in the same way that it has without Section 230. Listeners, just imagine if Google were held liable for every link to a piracy site, or if Facebook were liable for every post that someone wanted to sue about, or if every business could sue Yelp when someone wrote a bad review. I mean, the liability is just tremendous. And Section 230 really is a safe harbor from that liability. And that's what's allowed sites like Facebook and YouTube to thrive.
It's actually stronger than a safe harbor. When we talk about the DMCA, that functions as a safe harbor. But in
that
sense,
Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Right.
Right. Yeah. And so when we're speaking of Section 230, we're talking about all sorts of things that may have gone wrong with speech, but not including copyright. That for that, we would have a separate discussion about the merits of the DMCA.
Yeah.
But the DMCA similarly was designed to protect platforms, but it provides that protection much more conditionally. And so it's not necessarily been as effective in insulating them. And there's been a lot of costs and overhead because that protection is conditional. And that's a safe harbor. Whereas Section 230 functions much more as a wholesale immunity, and it's much more powerful, much more effective for the platforms, and ultimately makes their ability to do business much more affordable than if it had to look over its shoulder for every possible thing that could have gone wrong with this content.
Yeah, and we've seen 20 years of Section 230, and we've seen the success. We've seen companies like Facebook and YouTube thrive under this rule. And that kind of raises the question of why we're talking about this today, because if this is such settled law, and if it's so great and everyone agrees that it's so great for the internet, why are we talking about this? Well, of course, it's not that simple. And we've had a rash of court cases recently or relatively recently that deal with this issue. And you might think, based on the way we started the show, that this is a settled issue, but it's not. So what is the state of Section 230 today? Is it under attack? Is it under review? What's going on?
Well, I don't know if I want to stand for the proposition that it's not settled. The issue is that bad things happen. There's a lot of online content. A lot of that content is not particularly good, and bad things happen when not particularly good content is out there. And people who've been affected by the not particularly good content like to try to sue somebody to be made whole. And I don't mean to dismiss that. Some of these injuries are really serious and really grievous, and they're very unfortunate. But sometimes it is logistically difficult or functionally not particularly possible to find the actual people responsible for the bad stuff and hold them adequately accountable for it. Maybe you can't find them. Maybe they don't have any money, et cetera. There is a temptation to turn to the platform and say, well, you're big. I can find you, and I think you've got some money. You go make me whole.
Yeah, it's the easy answer. And if you take an example that is a little bit less high stakes, when we're talking about bodily harm, but Airbnb in New York City, it's a giant city. There are certain laws about how long you can rent out. Airbnb doesn't want to police the platform to the degree that the city would expect. And rather than go after every landlord and every customer in New York City that violates housing law, they'd much rather just fine the platform because it's simpler. And there are politics here too. I mean, going back to your voters after a legislative session and saying, you know, I tried, but this dang Section 230, I mean, that might not get you off the hook. So there are political incentives to hold platforms accountable. And you brought up, this is often very serious harm that is happening to these victims. And they don't, you know, when they bring their lawsuit, they're probably not thinking about Section 230. They're thinking about the horrible thing that happened to them and they want retribution. And that's totally understandable. And to take one very poignant example, we've got a case, Doe 14 versus Internet Brands. Now, Doe 14 is an anonymous, that's indicating Jane Doe, because this is not a good thing that happened to this poor woman, and she probably wanted to remain anonymous for obvious reasons. But essentially, as we were chatting before the show, there's a website involved, Model Mayhem, and this is a matchmaker between models and photographers. So just like a lot of services that we associate with the sharing economy, it's a platform, but the actual business that gets done happens between the individuals after they've been connected. And Jane Doe thought she was getting a photographer. Instead, she got a rapist. So it was not good at all. And I don't know what happened on the criminal angle, but she did sue the platform because she was alleging that Model Mayhem knew something about this. So how does Section 230 apply in a case like this?
Well, unfortunately, with this case, Section 230, the Ninth Circuit decided it didn't apply to this. And the concern is that its interpretation is not correct, and it's the way it's not correct is going to cause problems for platforms down the road. I think the court's theory is that what happened to her and this interaction with what is wrong with these people who attacked her was something that was outside of Model Mayhem being a platform. Because let's be clear, when you Section 230 doesn't mean that a platform has a get-out-of-jail-free card for every legal possible obligation it may have had to any particular user.
No, it's about speech, really.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you pay your platform for something and then the platform doesn't give you what you pay for, you can sue the platform because they have other obligations to you. And the court essentially is construing its relationship with her as something apart from its relationship with her as a platform. But that doesn't end up making sense. She wouldn't have been in the position of meeting any people through her profile on the platform if she had not put her profile on the platform, but for Model Mayhem being the platform that she was communicating, hi, I'm a model, and I would like to meet a photographer. That's how everything ended up happening. So I think the more correct view would have been to look and say it was functioning as a platform, and because it was functioning as a platform, Section 230 should have applied. So one of the concerns with this case going forward is that courts may be trying to snip away at the types of things a platform may do for which Section 230 could apply, but that may end up being chilling in terms of the type of speech and services they're able to offer.
It's almost like they're trying to narrow the definition of speech. Because if you look at this case and if you take the view that Section 230 applies, this looks pretty open and shut. She created a profile on the platform just like you do for a variety of other platforms or not. Sometimes you just post an ad with no profile like Craigslist. Same law applies. Something horrible happened. And while the man who committed this crime can be put in jail, he can be sued in civil court as well for damages. The point is that Section 230 prevents the website from being held liable. Now, I think the main point that's driving these lawsuits is not that people are unaware of federal law, or maybe that their lawyers are unaware of their federal law. It's that they want to be made whole. And these horrible people who commit horrible crimes might not have the money that can be seized from them that would equal the crime. So what do? They turn to a website that has money, clearly, and can make people whole, at least if you just throw out a number that the lawyers can agree with. She's not going to get that money from the perpetrator. So there's just this basic problem of, I need to be made whole, and my option is website.
Right. Well, that's why people do this, but it's also why in any particular case that comes up, you can look at that particular case and feel very tempted to say, wait, the just thing out of this would be to give her some sort of remedy. But we have to take a step back, because if we start snipping away at when Section 230 applies, all of a sudden it's not going to function as a very effective shield for anybody anymore, including for the instances where it's not quite clear. Bad facts make bad law, but sometimes people like to sue the platforms as a means to censor. If you would like to censor, it's actually much more efficient if you go after the platform than if you go after any particular speaker whose speech you don't like. They're like mosquitoes, but why not, or to use a better metaphor, perhaps a bee, but why go after a single bee if you can go after the whole hive? That would be a much more efficient way of taking out, and you turn the hive into, like, you put your pressure on that. You put a pressure at the source, where if the platform is afraid of the speech that it's facilitating, it make it have to do your bidding and put the pressure on the speech that you don't like. But that's when you get some real damage to speech by people who have power and like to abuse their power and like to control criticism of themselves. But that's where we have the strongest First Amendment arguments to make sure that platforms are free to allow all the speech that needs to be aired out in public to exist on that systems.
And justifications for chipping away at Section 230 tend to focus on public safety, right? Because you can have New York lawmakers in Albany complaining that Section 230 makes it hard to go after Airbnb. And that's like, whatever, right? I mean, you've got a powerful government and a powerful company squabbling. Does anyone really care who doesn't live there or who isn't directly involved in that economic activity? But in these cases that we're talking about today, it is public safety. And that's a very sympathetic concern. But an interesting idea we discussed before the show is whether chipping away at Section 230 actually is good for public safety or not. So you take the premise of someone like Sheriff Joe Dart in Chicago, who wants to silence Backpage because he thinks it's being used for sex trafficking. He thinks that shutting down Backpage would help public safety, or that getting rid of Section 230 would help in a case like Doe 14 versus Internet Brands. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that changing Section 230 would help public safety, or would it actually do the opposite?
I think it would do the opposite. And I think that's been borne out. One of the things is that Section 230 was actually not necessarily just construed as a, hey, we want to encourage platforms because they have all this cool speech and that's neat. That was a fundamental part of what was underpinning Section 230 and why they passed it.
The fact that the internet was young, we didn't want to constrain it with a bunch of lawsuits, we want to see this platform flourish.
Yeah, in fact, it's actually built into the statutory language itself. If you look at 230 subpart A and subpart B, it's full of all this wonderful language about how the internet is awesome and we need to make sure that it stays awesome. And to do that, we're going to have to make sure that platforms can exist and not be chilled in doing their platform.
Yeah, that's where Congress was in 1996.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's another part of it, sort of built into that into a couple of parts, which is the idea that, but we know there's bad stuff on the internet. So one of the reasons we're going to leave platforms to be much more legally unfettered to evolve is because they're also going to be legally unfettered in how they evolve to provide their own hygiene services for the internet, that they'll be in a position to, because they don't have to police for content, they are going to be better positioned to be able to police for content and keep their systems free of the bad stuff and more full of the good stuff. And you lose that ratio when platforms can't be free to make the decisions that are most appropriate for its user communities, its technology, its services, et cetera, when it has to feel essentially a proverbial legal gun to its head, where if they don't do something, then suddenly it's going to get very, very, very legally expensive for them. That tends to be very chilling to a platform to make the best choices. They end up making the choices they're forced to make, but that in the big picture, and to get back to, I think, your original point, that's not really going to make things safer overall. It's going to create, it's going to be counterproductive towards that mission.
Yeah, and it gets into the issue of perverse incentives. And we've talked about before the show that companies have every incentive to not have something like this happen, right? I mean, Model Mayhem did not set out to ever be facilitating a transaction between a rapist and a victim, right? That's not why they created the platform. That's not what they want to happen. And they want to do everything in their power to prevent something like that from happening. That said, unless you're a company like Uber and background checks are standard procedure and part of the business model, it's a different thing to expect companies like Model Mayhem, which are not as big as Google, not as well resourced as companies like Apple, to be policemen of their platforms. And you can get into a situation where rather than do proactive things and experiment with notification and background checks and things like that, they might just throw up blinders. And there's a good reason for that, because while Section 230 is this nice safe harbor that in theory should allow companies like Twitter to experiment with countering violent extremism and allow companies like Craigslist to experiment with taking down ads they think are involved in sex trafficking, when you compel companies to do that and when you say, if you don't, this happens, you're now disincentivizing them. Because if I'm a company, I do want to avoid liability, I'm just going to throw up blinders. I'm going to say, I don't know who Jane Doe is. I don't know who the photographer is. I never knew anything about either of them. And we don't look up any information about our users. And we are dumb. And we are a dumb pipe. And we let information flow through the dumb pipe. And we don't look at anything. And we have no obligation or desire to help our users stay safe. That's not a good way to get the best environment. I mean, and we talked about this is a really important question for the audience. How do you create an environment where people are safe to use your platform? And the answer might not be chipping away at Section 230. It might be something else.
I mean, a company is going to be rational, but a rational decision that they're going to be forced to make is, how do I avoid expensive liability? And they're going to start making decisions along the lines of, what do I need to do to avoid the expensive liability? And you really want them to be focused on what is going to make them the best platforms, because that's going to be the platform that's going to have the most good stuff, and it's going to be the platform that has the least amount of bad stuff. And if the company gets it wrong or is haphazard about this decision, then the market will choose not to use that platform. So you want them to only be thinking, how do we be the best platform? When you start distracting the platform with other questions about how do we just stay in business and not get sued, they're going to make a series of decisions that are not going to be consistent with this policy goal of having the best platforms.
Yeah, and you have an issue. We talked about Barnes versus Yahoo. Here's an instance where a woman had some issues with defamatory content on Yahoo. She asked Yahoo to remove it. They said they would and then didn't. So there's a different fact pattern here, whereas Model Mayhem never said they would prevent horrible things, or they never made claims about that case. Yahoo here said, yeah, we got you covered, and then didn't follow through. Now, that's a different kind of case, because they made a promise and then didn't keep it. That's a contract issue, not necessarily a free speech issue. But the effect there, if I understand you correctly, is that that answers the question of why do companies never promise to do anything, right? Because a promise gets you in trouble. So Match Mayhem could say, we promise to conduct background checks and make sure that everyone's safe, but why do something like that if you're then going to be held liable for it later down the line? So the effect of the Barnes Yahoo case seems to be companies don't promise anything they can't keep, because they know if they can't keep the promise, hiding behind Section 230 doesn't work necessarily because of the finding in this case.
Right. It ended in Barnes v. Yahoo. The court actually went to some length to say, yes, on all your 230 related issues, you're totally fine. But we've decided this is something that exists apart from Section 230, even though Section 230 put Yahoo in a position that they didn't have to promise to delete the content. But they chose to offer to remove the content. But all of a sudden, they ended up, you know, more trouble than it was worth, where they're getting punished for having at least thought about doing it, which maybe isn't as effective than actually doing it. But they didn't have to take down anything. By even considering to take it down, all of a sudden, they ended up in a position where they were much more vulnerable than if they had never tried to do that at all. So that's been very chilling to platforms, where we want them to be proactive, but now they are specifically chilled from being proactive. Where why tempt trouble? It's just not worth it.
Yeah. So, I mean, where is this going? Because you have the Ninth Circuit decision, and that is troubling for Section 230. It's also telling that, correct me if I'm wrong, Ninth Circuit is in San Francisco.
Ninth Circuit is larger than that. But it will cover all the California platforms. It's going to cover the West Coast platforms, Seattle, and many other West Coast states.
So it's fascinating that the court that is holds jurisdiction over Silicon Valley, made an incorrect ruling on such a critical issue that will impact the platforms. And you would think that a court in that jurisdiction might be more in tune with this law, but you know, there you go. We have that case. There are other cases. There's one involving Match.com. There's all the Airbnb stuff, which is not necessarily about people being harmed in horrible ways, but it's important for the economy. So you've got all these cases going on. You've got the law on the books in 1996. You've got discussions about updating the Communications Act for other reasons that have to do with, you know, telecom deployment and old stuff like that. So where does that leave us from here? Where is this going? Do you see legislation happening? Do you see more conflict in the courts? Is there going to be a Supreme Court case? I mean, paint us a picture for the future.
We've never actually had the Supreme Court look at Section 230. There's some concern of, you know, what happens if they do. There have been some tendency to want to amend Section 230 because it's such a powerful statute, and people who don't always like the degree it's applied have, after they've tried through the courts to have it not apply, have decided, okay, maybe we need to go to Congress. Mostly what we've ended up getting is not that Section 230 has been amended, but other laws around it that may interact with Section 230 have been amended in such a way to fall through the exceptions that are built into Section 230. But otherwise, I think we're just going to keep seeing things in the courts. People will get hurt and people will sue, even people who don't get hurt. People who would like to not have certain speech that happened continue to happen will try to find ways to suppress it, and they will target the platforms if they feel that that's effective. It's up to the courts to hold a line, and there's some very good precedent that's unfolded in previous years, including in the Ninth Circuit. So it's to be seen how courts will, what kind of line they'll take on these cases.
Yeah, and you've got folks like our colleague Gus Hurwitz, who once told me, you know, he's not against Section 230 necessarily, but I think he said something like blanket immunity is never a good idea. So there's always that issue where just like, you know, someone looking at this from like a legal or administrative perspective might just say, is there any instance where there should be blanket immunity and never any exceptions?
I think the problem is the same reason why when we use the slippery slope analogy when we talk about free speech, that, boy, there's a lot of crappy speech out there, but the process of trying to figure out where to draw the line between the good stuff and the bad stuff, we know that doesn't work in the speech context, and this is basically the exact same discussions. There is no good way to trim this in a way that won't harm the good stuff that we're trying to preserve and encourage, so I think it's best not to try.
Well, there you have it. My guest has been Kathy Gellis, a solo cyber lawyer focused on platforms and free speech, and she's based in Sausalito, visiting D.C. this week. Kathy, thanks so much for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email, media@techfreedom.org. Feel free to give us your feedback, pitch ideas, or guests for the show. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. And if you leave a review, I promise that we will not sue you, nor will we sue iTunes. For the latter, we are legally unable to. For the former, there's some bill about anti-slap that's going through. We talked about that show on the show before, but we'll get into that in another episode. So feel free to leave a review and ensure that your First Amendment rights will be upheld by Tech Freedom. Thanks for listening.
Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.